Hello, Worsford Forward listeners. Well, what a fun episode this is to be able to drop into your ears this week. It is the recording of our recent live show at Vault Festival 2023 in London, where we hosted our World's Worst Games night with guests Johnny Chiodini returning to the show for the third time and Ellie Gibson returning to the show for the second time. It was so much fun being back in a room doing this live, sharing the stage with some lovely people and sharing the space with some lovely audience members. And so I'm not going to delay you too much before you get to listen to that. But if you would like to watch the footage from the live recording, well, that's going to be dropping into the inboxes of our Patreon donors. Thank you, as ever, to our donors on Patreon who help pay the bills and keep the podcast going. If you would like to be one of those people, if you feel that you have the monetary capability to help support the show, visit patreon.com/worstfootforward, drop us a few quid, and like I say, you'll get all sorts of extra content. There's extra bonus interviews with guests, there's occasional uncut footage from episodes, and like I said, there is the video of the live show from Vault Festival, which not only includes the full show but also a bit of the befores and afters as well, the bits before we started the recording proper. So, or maybe the word is improper, who knows. Thank you to all of the audience members who came down to see us on the 19th of February. And thank you, of course, to Johnny and Ellie for being on the show. And thank you to you for listening, which you're about to do right now.
Contestants, and welcome to Worst Foot Forward, the podcast that celebrates the best of the worst. I'm Ben Vanderveld, and this week you find us hidden deep underground in a vaulted system of tunnels populated by wayward comics, overconfident nerds, and musical theatre ultras. Am I at the Vault Festival or an immersive D&D event based upon 95% of my personality as a 14-year-old? Well, unless we're filling in the other 5% by actually being in the Red Dwarf episode Back to Reality, it's probably the former. Tonight, it's game night, so I've cooked a lovely pigeon, rabbit and venison terrine. Dressed in my sexiest garter and money belt, and have been cosplaying as paranoid corporate mannequin Michael Douglas all week. Just in case I've overthought this, I've cranked up the Dreamcast, laid out the board for Monopoly, the sun-made raisin edition, which genuinely exists, and, well, I hate to break it to everyone, both with us and listening at home, but if you're now thinking of it, you have all just lost. And joining me at the fold-out board is my well-shuffled fold-out co-host. It is the D6 to my D20, the convoluted cheat code to my own button mashing, and the bowler hat to my little hairy dog. It's Barry McStay!
Now, the last time we did one of these at Vault, a pandemic started 2 weeks later, so where were we? I feel like gathering a collective of geeks in a really humid tunnel might have been the epicenter. So we're going to repeat the experiment to see what happens.
Yeah, if something else kicks off in a couple of weeks' time, we change the name of the podcast to The Two Horsemen of the Apocalypse.
If you haven't listened to Westwood Forward before, give us a cheer. Hey, some newbies. Well, listen, if you don't know us, first of all, take your phones out and subscribe right away. We're a comedy trivia podcast that celebrates failure, exploring the mistakes that human beings leave behind themselves, like wobbly clown shoe-shaped footprints in the sands of history. Each week, we and a guest or guests debate our candidates for the world's worst something. We've celebrated, for example, the world's worst football club, a club called Ibis in Brazil, who once went 3 years and 11 months without a win, and became so famous for being terrible that some of their fans were livid when they started, and I quote, destroying their history by going on a winning streak in 2017.
We have also covered broad topics like the world's worst coincidence. And it's funny, I was just saying that earlier today. Anyway, where we discovered that Robert Todd Lincoln managed to be present at 3 of the 4 successful assassinations of US presidents, only one of which involved his dad.
You'd definitely take him off the invite list, wouldn't you?
Yeah, 100%.
And we've also debated the world's worst country, where we learned that Liechtenstein is so forgettable that it has been invaded accidentally by the Swiss army 5 times in the past 60 years. If you're getting invaded by the neutral Swiss, including one occasion where the Swiss actually blew up some tables in a ski resort in what was a real statement of intent to dominate the Alpine sports market. In this show, we're hosting a World's Worst Games night, and to play the games and find more trivia, we need some guests. So, player one, on my right, is a former member of the video team for gaming site Eurogamer, Dungeon Master for the Dungeons & Dragons series Oxventure, and host of youtube.com/Johnny Chiodini. Their special abilities include painting gaming miniatures, owning Staffordshire Bull Terriers, and having a surname that sounds more like that of a ruling Florentine merchant family during the Renaissance than that of a 21st century internet nerd. It's Johnny Chiodini.
Thank you so much.
And Ready Player 2, on my left, is a former member of the video team for gaming site Eurogamer. Wow, some character creation in games is very cut and paste, isn't it? She's a journalist, comedian, the games expert on Darrow O'Brien's Go 8-Bit, and one half of the podcast duo Scummy Mummies, all about parenting. Her special abilities include playing video games, raising her children, and monetizing both of these things. It's Ellie Gibson.
Can I just say, Johnny, having heard that introduction about you looking like someone who would not look out of place in a Florentine family, you look like you could absolutely rock a ruff.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And a doublet.
I don't know. I've got a pretty weirdly shaped torso.
All right.
It's an audio medium. Please describe it for our listeners.
Well, I've just got very little legs. I'm mostly torso.
Few legs, Johnny.
My legs are short. My torso is proportionally too long, and it's just like, how to put this? I've sort of got the hourglass figure that only somebody who really likes pints can maintain.
Too much sand in the bottom bulb.
Yeah, and weirdly at the top as well. In the middle, I am stunning.
Ellie, anything to add on your own character creation?
Oh, I'm not going to describe my own, you know, not so much hourglass, just sort of glass. Pint glass.
A pint glass.
Yeah, slightly wider at the top, but not enough that it looks that nice.
And can hold 568 millilitres without a problem.
I did breastfeed 2 children, so yeah.
So like any good games night, we brought along games night snacks, and like any responsible live podcast of Alt Festival, we are not allowed to consume them because of health and safety.
But as soon as the show finishes, come up and find us at the bar and you can eat all of the snacks.
it's very much a show and tell. I have brought along jelly babies. There's a couple of reasons for this. Normally at games nights, I bring along chocolate, a lot of chocolate, but without wanting to let you guys peer too much behind the curtain, I have just come off 4 days of the most challenging parenting I have had to do in my entire life, where my 4-year-old has been, and there's no way of sugarcoating this, a full cunt.
That's the explicit rating on iTunes again. Yes. Every week we try to get...
And A, my blood type is now Cadbury's. B, if you're listening to this in 14 years' time, I'm very sorry, Fraser. I have gone for jelly babies, which are my backup, because if a game is going badly, I can decapitate them, and if it's going well, I can consume them whole. And also, if you lose any meeple, they stand in for them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I've gone for a similar. I've brought marshmallows. I have brought them in a Tupperware box, Ben, because that is good Foley and radio work. And not only are they not in the bag, but they're also quiet to eat. Good for podcasting. And they've been gamified. Have everyone played Fluffy Bunnies, where you stuff as many... Yes! Many marshmallows as you can into your mouth. The record, when I played in university, is held by a former guest of this show, Amelia Singer, who was on our World's Worst Wine episode. She got 22 marshmallows into her mouth on the night that Barack Obama was elected American president. And I think that is the tribute you would have wished for.
I bought designer snacks, you'll see. I've got a Chanel bag here. Bet you didn't know that Chanel actually do snacks as well as handbags and lipsticks and shit. They actually make fish and chips. Fish and chips. So I've bought those to show. Are you looking askance, Ben?
I feel like you've wandered into Bill and Ted's phone box and returned from the early 1970s with those. They are amazing.
You can get them in like pound shops and B&M. I'm showing how classy I am now with my Chanel bag. That's what I do. Just go down Catford, go in Dunelm, and then put whatever I buy in a Chanel bag. Nobody's any the wiser.
And they're Burton's. It's not the same company that makes sort of cut price middle manager suits.
No, they're Chanel. They're Chanel.
Oh, they're Chanel.
That's
Chanel.
Clue is in
chips.
The bag. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
They
yeah.
did cocoa as well, didn't they? I think
something like that. Yeah.
Yes.
Unbelievable. Johnny, what have you brought along?
Well, I thought back to the group of reprobates I played board games with quite a lot, and I thought it's a toss-up between olive stuff with anchovies, risky in an underground venue that already smells, no offence, Vault Festival, quite bad, hashtag save Vault. I have brought some crisps. I don't actually know how to pronounce these, because I believe they are Polish. Anyone in the audience particularly?
Frazzles.
Przinki.
Przinki, we're hearing. Is that right?
We call them bacon crack.
Bacon crack.
because for those of you listening along, these are crisps that kind of look like quavers, but if someone has taken an airbrush and done two very like neat bacon lines down them, and they taste like bacon, and Pringles can get stuff, frankly, because if you have one of these, like it is a lifelong problem. Yeah. So like, oh, you can't stop until you've had all 135 grams of Pringles. Fuck off.
And they're in a
bag. It's a lifetime thing.
They're in a bag about the size of a piglet as well. So,
yeah. And these will go quickly. Yeah.
Great. Again, so. We'll find us in the bar afterwards. Lovely. It would be remiss of us to not talk about our world's worst board game. And when we did World's Worst Board Game, about 260 episodes ago, we decided that it is most definitely Monopoly. In our episode in 2017, we agreed Monopoly is the worst board game ever invented. It beat games, including a German memory game, where players had to try and match pairs of cards which have pictures of women's left and right boobs on them, called Boozen Memo. So you had to match the left boob to the right boob. And then we ran a Twitter poll, putting all of our first 64 worsts from the show, and had members of the public vote and narrowed it down a World Cup of Worsts. And Monopoly beat Capital Punishment in the final. Monopoly is bad for lots of reasons. Long leads to arguments, celebrates capitalism. I'm sure lots of you know it was invented by a woman called Lizzie Magee, and it was meant to demonstrate the negative aspects of private ownership and landlordism, and it was called the Landlord's Game. And then a man, 30 years later, stole it. A guy called, yes, Boo Charles Darrow.
No, I think that was Boo All Men.
Oh yeah, Boo All Men.
Boo All Men.
Yeah. And Charles Darrow played this game with some friends and basically got them to like tell him the rules, and he repackaged it and sold it himself, and he is patient zero in this pandemic. And Monopoly is most definitely viral. There's over 1 billion people who've played it, and it has more variants than COVID. Monopoly monopoly.fandom.com lists 1,566 editions of the game, most of them Marvel related.
And funnily enough, 1566 is precisely the year that Johnny looks like they're from.
Yes. So I'm going to list some Monopoly variants, Johnny and Ellie, and we're going to see if you can spot the fake in among them,
okay.
Right? Klingon Monopoly, Bass Fishing Monopoly, Monopoly Horse Lovers Edition, Alpaca-opoly, .com Edition, US Coast Guard Edition, Falcon and the Winter Soldier Monopoly, More Monopoly, Triple X-opoly, Monopoly Socialism, Essex Monopoly, and Trump Entertainment Resorts Edition.
I think XXXopoly and Horse Lovers Monopoly are the same edition.
Yeah, they're the same publisher, yeah.
I think Socialist Monopoly. I mean, it's an oxymoron, isn't it?
Yeah. You think so, yeah. You both agreed.
I'm going to say Coast Guard Monopoly as well. I just don't buy it. I mean, there are so many niche things. There was a Monopoly edition made for my university, King's College London. And yet No, I still don't buy the Coast Guard one. It's just like, community chess. You have drowned. Go to prison.
Win $10.
Chance, you have angered Poseidon.
Hate to break it to you, they're all real. Notes on Monopoly Socialism. One of the blurbs for it says, winning is for capitalists. Contribute to the community fund unless you choose to deplete it, which is such a comment on socialistic experiments the world over. And it has chance cards, which shake things up with things like lousy neighbours, vegan meatloaf, and bad plumbing. So that tells you how the people who make this game view socialism generally. But we on the podcast want to try and redeem Monopoly somehow. Somehow there's got to be a way of making this game better. You know, it's so long. It's so terrible. So we've asked Johnny and Ellie to come up with some suggestions of how you would improve the game of Monopoly. Ellie.
All right, well, first of all, I quite like Monopoly. You're going to throw me out of your podcast
now. Get out immediately. Heresy.
Think it's a good time. But, you know, you could make it better. And I always find, if you want to make something better, why not make it sexy? That rule applies to everything, doesn't it? Apart from maybe funerals and primary schools. nothing's worse if you make it sexier, is it? So... strip Monopoly.
Yeah.
So every time you pass go, you have to take off your top or something, an item of clothing. And then you give all the places sexy names, like Prickadilly. Yeah.
Yes.
Or Coxford Street.
Yeah.
Or what you do with the old Kent Road is your own business, isn't it? That's my idea.
Lovely. And XXX Monopoly, basically every space was a sex act. Yeah. And you have to either do the sex act or pay a fine to not do the sex act.
That sounds like lots of fun.
Yeah.
That sounds great. I will say, I did once play Strip Twister, which is where this idea came from, and I got a boyfriend out of it. So there you go.
Does, in your version of Monopoly, does free parking just become a dogging square?
That's right, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Johnny.
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, you've already alluded to the fact that Monopoly first emerged as the landlord's game, which was supposed to show how, you know, capitalism bad, being a landlord awful. And I do think Monopoly, even though it has been, you know, stolen, is a really great sort of exemplar of what capitalism is like, but it doesn't quite go far enough. I think what is missing is sort of the mutually assured destruction that really gives capitalism its worldwide zing. So my suggestion is tactical nukes. I feel like once, because you know, someone starts pulling away, and the rest of Monopoly is just an attritional thing where you think you're doing all right, and then you land on one of their properties, and they go, because they're about to take you to the cleaners. But if the second the first hotel goes down, everyone gets the opportunity, if they so choose, to launch a nuke at any point, they can wipe out someone else's empire, reset the game, and introduce all sorts of fun new areas, like one third of the board is irradiated. And, you know, again, like, you've got, the chance all of your teeth have fallen out. Community
go
chest.
The reactor.
Yeah, you have found some water purification tablets. Or, you know, an elderly neighbour has offered up their flesh. I really feel like it would spice things up a bit.
Yeah. What starts making me think is, obviously, we've not had time to comb through the record of all 1,566 editions of Monopoly.
Mm.
It is very likely there's a Chernobyl edition of Monopoly, isn't there?
The elephant's foot is Park Lane.
Yeah. Oh, wait, that was too far for someone in the audience. Well, listen, we see if you can do better. We have asked our audience for suggestions on how to make Monopoly a better game as well. So those of you in the room, please send us a DM on Twitter or on Insta at worstfoot with the hashtag #MakeMonopolyBetter and your suggestion. Do it now. We won't shout if you're having your phone out. And the best suggestion will win a mystery prize at the end of the show. Very, very good. Ben.
So, we have asked our guests to bring something along, honing in on their speciality. And one of Johnny's most robust skills, which is an appalling adjective to use. I'm so sorry.
It's fine.
But what you are often best known for is being a brilliant DM in D&D. And for those who aren't following the acronym game, that is Dungeon Master.
Mm.
And if you have never played D&D, when you create a character, that character gets different stat categories that you have to put together to create. So the traditional ones are strength, dexterity, constitution, by which basically means both your ability to take both a punch and a pint, charisma, intelligence, and wisdom. So those are the standard ones, but if we were to put together a Johnny Chiodini character, what would your six character stats be?
So I actually, for this, took a little sidestep into a different role-playing game. It's a rule system called Savage Worlds, which is one of my favourites. And the interesting thing about this is it gives you edges and hindrances. And edges are things that will give you an edge in, say, a combat situation or a social situation. You can take a character creation, for example, attractive or very attractive. And that gives you bonus modifiers to your, you know, persuasion rolls or what have you. Or you can take, you know, like beefcake and you can up your intimidation or what have you.
Too sexy to take a punch.
Exactly. So I went through the official ones and I picked three edges and three hindrances for myself, because this is where the meat of the character really comes in. It shows alertness, because I have weapons-grade anxiety, and I'm always looking out for danger, which has made me very, very good at just spotting things. It meant that growing up, I was one of those people that was always pointing out continuity errors, in films. I'd be like, in that shot, Tommy Lee Jones has got his legs crossed, but in the wide, they're meh.
That is a weird version of Basic Instinct that you watched.
It's actually the scene in Men in Black where Rip Torn is like, we're not hosting an intergalactic kegger. In one shot, legs crossed. In the other, man spreading like he's on the Bakerloo line. You will never watch that film in the same way again. You are welcome.
You made your parents wish they had one of those brain wiping things. They could just zap you after the film.
Oh my God, my parents are saints.
I did not expect that you would have a good Rip Torn in your locker as well. Yeah, that was a very good impression.
Thank you very much. I guess it was kind of Will Smith impersonating Rip Torn in the same movie, because that's the line he does. But we'll move on. I also chose Elan, which is, according to the rulebook, the French word for energy or spirit, which basically means like rising to the challenge when a crisis is going on. I chose this because if I'm in a pub and a fight breaks out, I run into the middle of it out of a desire to break it up. But I have done this several times over the course of history. Not once have I stopped the fight or done anything other than delay it briefly as some people try and work out who it is trying to speak politely to everyone in the middle of the melee. But it is at least entertaining. Yeah. And then my final edge, I chose hard to kill because no one's done it yet. For hindrances, I chose nightmares, because I have those all the time. See, again, weapons-grade anxiety. I chose vengeful. It is absolutely my worst trait. I bear grudges like no one's business. And I chose overconfident, because I am white and I was assigned male at birth. So there you go.
I like the idea of you being both vengeful and overconfident. You know, like, I'm coming after you, but I'm going to mess it up.
Yep. Oh, 100%.
Ah, tremendous stuff. Now, all throughout that, those in the audience will see Johnny was fiddling with their dice, which I'm so sorry. I really did my best not to make that a filthy euphemism, and a good 25% if you also failed to do that as well. But not least because Johnny worked for a Dicebreaker, and we also asked them to bring along their thoughts on what the world's worst dice game is, and I brought some of my own dice chat as well, but you can go first, pal.
Boggle. I, you know what?
Mate, there's a fight you're going to have to get into the middle of right now after that. Yeah.
Sorry, when I wrote that one... The Chernobyl gag went down better than that.
I was waiting for some people to go, Boggle, no, Bananagrams, no, Boggle.
I kind of, when I decided this earlier, I thought, I don't know how this is going to play. Apparently badly, but I just think it's awful. Like, the problem is, it is all, like, it's 99% theatrics. If anyone's not familiar with Boggle here, it is basically just a big cube into which a lot of dice go, and on the different sides of the dice are letters. And you shake them up, and then you put them all down, and then someone, generally the person who owns the game and has insisted everyone play, whips the lid off like they're revealing a fine dinner in a restaurant, and a silver platter comes up.
Yes, the Boggle cloche.
Yeah, exactly. And that is everyone's cue to be the biggest prick they can be with a pencil, because you've got to start making words, and all of the letters have to have to be touching one another, but there are rules about how you have to make a horizontal, an orthogonal movement before you can make a diagonal one. And it's basically just that is not the competition. The competition is not to write down as many good words as you can before the timer runs out. It's to be the smuggest, most, like, worst version of yourself you can be in the scoring phase. Because you'll read out a word. Let's say you got bacon. Someone else will go, I've got bacon. You both have to cross out bacon. And then you might say plate. And they'll go, actually, there's no way to form plate without doing an illegal. Just play scattergrees. Just stop it. Like, you are forcing a collection of perfectly good six-sided cubes to just be weapons of just mass smuggery. That's not even a word. So
it is in Boggle, though, I think.
Yeah, oh. Well, I wrote you're fine. Smuggery. it's just shit. It makes me irrationally angry, and this is a game, for context, I've not played in at least 20 years.
How do you feel about Yahtzee, which I think of as sort of like maths Boggle? Your face just twitched there.
It did, yeah.
That was like you'd been locked in a cell by the CIA and forced to play Yahtzee.
Yahtzee is like a perfectly fine thing to play if you've got no imagination. Like, if that's the best thing you can think about doing that afternoon. Like, if you'd rather do that than have a cup of tea or make a piece of toast or make a piece of toast in the bath. Like, there are so many better games out there. Several of them involve playing in the road or on train tracks.
Johnny,
like, it is fine. It's fine.
Johnny,
and that's
can
the worst
I ask
thing.
You, do you have children, Johnny?
No.
No, you don't, Johnny. That's right. That's right. So you don't know that there are so many things you'd rather do than play Yahtzee. But sometimes it's raining and it's Wednesday and it's half term and you've got an 11-year-old and he's been on screen for 18 hours and you feel like he's got to do something. Otherwise, you're going to go and then he's going to ring the NSPCC. So you play fucking Yahtzee. And actually, it's not so bad.
I can see why you like Monopoly now.
So. Yeah, yeah.
So you're blaming your children for all of your bad opinions.
That's right. It's my son's fault. I'm a Monopoly apologist. That's fair. Yeah.
That is fair. I realise that all of my comments have come from a place of me being... I've learned this acronym recently. It's called a dinkwad, which is double income, no kids with a dog. Which is me and my spouse.
Sounds great.
You dinkwad.
Yeah.
Sounds like an 80s teen movie villain insult. Yeah. Like Biff should be calling Marty a dinkwad.
Yeah, and I deserve it. I get that.
Yeah.
No, I could tell you don't have kids, not because of the arts thing, because I don't know if you can see, but you're sitting on a very large pile of disposable income, I've noticed. So, well done, you.
Thank you.
So I'm not sure whether I'm going to have enough of a riposte to your two-decade-worth foundation of rage at Boggle, but I'll have a go. First of all, a question for all of you. I looked into sort of the history of dice, and particularly, dice have been found on archaeological digs that are 2,000-3,000 years old. What places are they found? Not geographical, but what sort of places in ancient cities do dice tend to be found?
Brothels.
No, but I... well, sorry, immediately sex dice.
Sorry. I just needed to say the word brothel as it had been a week.
Either that or strange cube-shaped butt plugs.
Yeah.
Dice factories. Dice factories.
Yes, the ancient Babylonian dice factories.
Military camps.
Oh, that's a good suggestion.
On campaign.
Oh, no.
I was you know what, temples? Because that's... as far away from a brothel, in theory.
Is it? Come on now.
If we go by the legal definition, they seem apposite. Opposite. No, wait. Well, no, apposite. Fuck it. Sorry, I'm swearing like a
sailor. The two places that they're most found are either in rubbish bins, clearly some ancient players of Boggle, or, rather worryingly, graveyards.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Roll them bones.
Yeah, well, clearly, yeah. I mean, I'm guessing grave goods for the afterworld. So you know, you die.
You get into past the pearly gates if you beat St. Peter in a game of craps.
Yeah, and then you get past there, and you just hear this voice going, "Einstein was wrong. I do play dice." Hello, nerds. I looked in a couple of sort of like almost sort of like progenitors of D&D. So there is a book from 1482 by a chap called Lorenzo Spiritu Gualtieri from Perugia. Obviously, Johnny's family knows them well. And it was called the Libro del Sorti. And it was basically a guide to using 3 6-sided dice to divine the answer to any of 12 questions about the future. So what you had to do was choose a question, which then points to a king and an image of one of 12 historical and biblical figures, like Priam, the last king of Troy, King Solomon. And then these kings instruct the reader to assign a table associated with celestial bodies and animals and mythical figures. And then these tables provide combinations of dice rolls. And whatever the reader rolls, they find that combination on the table, which then directs them to a sphere of different celestial signs and their Roman gods, like the Sun and Taurus and Capricorn and so on. And these spheres finally direct to a list of the decided fates organised according to the prophets of Christianity. So essentially what this game is, do you remember at primary school the little sort of like beak things the little girls would get on?
Yeah.
The chatterbox, yeah. It's the Renaissance Italian version of chatterbox. I also found... This remarkable thing about both the biggest and smallest dice that has ever been made. So
the smallest one is here.
The smallest.
Yeah, I just can't see it.
Oh yeah, no. Not in terms of sides. In terms of sides, what do we think is the most sides a dice has ever had?
Oh no. This feels like a physics question.
We are going to wander into the realms of physics in a minute.
It's got to have at least 2. No, it's got to have 3. It's got
no, the biggest, the biggest.
First. Oh, the biggest.
The biggest, yeah. Oh.
The largest number of cells.
150. Yeah.
Oh.
200. 2,000.
2,000. Higher. So, according to Henry Segerman, who's a mathematician at Oklahoma State University and co-founder of Dice Lab, 120-sided dice is not an original idea, but we were just the people crazy enough to actually do it.
No one asked if we should.
Yeah. And what this dice is it is...
Unnecessary.
It is unnecessary, yeah. It is a dysdiacus triacontahedron. And it features 120 scalene triangular faces and 62 vertices. And the massive challenge was to have numbers on opposite sides of the dice that always added up to the same number, and making the dice equally likely to fall on the same side, and making the numbers legible as well, while still giving a shit. And it's basically, here are some sentences I don't understand. The faces of it create the largest number of symmetrical faces possible for an icosahedron and the biggest, most complex fair dice possible. To be considered fair, a dice must be equally likely to land on any of its sides when you roll it. It is about 10 to the 98, even with that restriction, the number of possible combinations on there. That's about 1% of a Google and about 10 to the 18 times the number of known atoms in the universe. It's, and I quote, like... a crazy big number. What's the smallest number of sides a dice has, guys?
-3. But 4-sided dice is quite common. Is it must be less than 4?
You can have a D3.
Yeah.
You can have a D1.
No, you can't.
You can't.
That's a coin.
No.
That's a D2.
No, it's not. It's a Mobius strip.
Oh, fuck off.
Someone has made a Mobius dice.
What a prick.
What a, yeah.
Hang on, but what's the point in it then? Oh, shall I see what number I get? It's the only number. We've printed a 6 on it just to make people happy.
Yeah, I guess so. It's just you can.
We've printed the infinity sign. I should have said that. That's disappointing.
Yeah. It's the participation trophy of dice.
Right.
That's what it is. The last thing I wanted to tell you about was Bergen. So Bergen is the place where the most number of medieval dice have been found. And there's been about 30 different ones have been found, but there's one, the Bergen dice, is most famous because it has a 1, a 2, a 3, 2 4s, and 2 5s on it.
Right.
And archaeologists have tried to work out whether it is a obscure kind of game, or if it's a cheat dice, and they think that it's basically a cheat from history.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. But despite all of that, fuck, you make me hate Boggle.
Now, going back to Sex Monopoly, obviously the dice got 69 sides. I've really thought about it a lot.
Surely it should be two dice with a six and a nine. Never mind. I've overthought it. Lastly, Johnny is an expert at running RPGs.
Are we going to pick a winner of those, by the way?
Oh, a winner of those. I mean, Johnny's. Yeah. Clearly Johnny's.
Okay, absolutely. Oh, yeah, congratulations.
Very kind.
I'm going to fall on my own die. Just give us a very brief rundown for those who don't know what an RPG is, a role-playing game is.
Basically, it's collaborative storytelling where typically one person takes the role of narrator / referee. So they decide when the story is drifting out of things that could be reasonably narrated by anyone, you know, just around the table. For example, saying, I walk up to the bar, I open the door, I walk in and I start a conversation with the bartender. If you said, say, I open the door, I pull out a gun, and I shoot the bartender in the head from the hip at 50 paces, not everyone can just do that as a matter of course, nor should they. So in this very specific example, the person fulfilling this role as narrator / referee, sometimes referred to as the dungeon master or games master or, you know, what have you, they will ask you to roll, and then you'll have a character sheet with stats that will tell you, I'm this good at shooting, and then you roll and you see whether you hit or not. If you succeed, great, you've shot someone in the head in cold blood. If not, you've missed. Either way, the action advances, they explain the consequences, they set the scene again, and then everyone is free to act.
Lovely.
Great. So what we've asked Johnny to do is to run the world's shortest ever RPG. And we've given Johnny 5 minutes.
5 minutes on the clock.
And they're going to run this game for the three of us.
Okay.
Off you go.
Right.
For the record.
Oh, we've got to get our dice out.
Okay, so what I'm going to need you to do is just find the 12-sided one.
Oh, no, that's the hardest one to find. Yes, good. Is that right?
It's the hardest one to find. You've got a 1 in 7 chance that will accumulate as you go. You've nailed
it. Got it, yeah.
Okay, is everyone ready?
Yes.
I'm going to hit go on this timer.
Yes.
Welcome to the exciting game of Adventure Bombs. This is a game in which you are all ordinary adventurers who have been cursed by a wizard. The wizard has turned you into walking, living, breathing bombs. In this game, you have one stat, and your stat is bomb. So basically, whenever you want to do something in this game that requires skill or more than just a, you know, a random element of chance, I'm going to ask you to roll this die. Mm-hmm. If you roll 4 or above, then you succeed. So pretty good odds. If, however, at any point in this game, somebody rolls a 1, you explode, setting off a chain reaction that will wipe the party and end the game. I told you I could probably run this in under 5.
Yeah. This sounds like your modification to Monopoly again.
Yeah.
I am going quite explosives heavy, and I don't really know why, but...
One of us is a dog, one of us is a top hat, one of us is a boot.
We're going to get into character creation now. Okay. I need... this is sort of just imagine generic fantasy, like, think Tolkien, you're there, except for you're an explosive. For character creation, I need your name, your favourite weapon, and what type of explosive you are.
Okay,
my name, I'm going to go for my traditional D&D name, which is Osric Panhandle. And I am TNT from the Acme Corporation.
Scratch that out.
What's the final thing?
Your favourite weapon.
My favourite weapon is Piers Morgan.
Okay, holding him by the ankles and swinging him around like a mace coated in blancmange. Okay. Barry?
I am Tim Keeper. I'm a time bomb.
I love it.
And my favourite weapon is my bare hands. Because I've got two of them. Because it's a clock thing.
Ellie?
Fuck, we had 1 minute, guys. Fuck yourselves.
Yeah, that's not enough time to think up something new. So I'm going to use the character I use. So sometimes I stream on Twitch and I stream erotic interactive fiction sometimes. And my character in that is called Rivita Bumface. So that...
Okay.
And she's a sexy nanny. So that's what we're going with. Secret weapon. Sex bomb. I don't know. Right. A very sharp knife.
Lovely. Yeah, perfect. All right. For those of you counting along at home, we're over halfway through our time. You are at the entrance to the wizard's tower. The wizard has cursed you to become bombs and wasn't expecting you to walk in the front door, frankly. So has sent some of his minions after you. There are some living skeletons kind of all clacking their way towards you with little bone daggers in their hands. What are you all going to do?
I, with my fleshy hands, try and rip one of the daggers from their skeletal hands.
All right, make me a roll, please.
That's an 11.
You have done that. You have successfully wrested the dagger from the arm of the skeleton. The arm has come off entirely, in fact.
Oh, so
it's got quite a long range.
Yeah, nice.
Ben?
I am going to grab Piers Morgan by the ankle.
Yeah, lovely.
I'm going to use him to sort of do a human pinata effect on the remaining skeletons.
Lovely, great.
I'm going to do what Rivita Bumface the Sexy Nanny would do,
yep.
Which is say, would you like me to put the children to bed or fix you a whiskey?
make me a roll as well, please.
Okay.
I successfully rolled 11.
Amazing. So you sort of clothesline... I'm going to say two of the three so that just their legs are standing and the bones are just chattering on the floor.
Nice.
Like wind-up teeth. Ellie?
I've got four.
All right. That is also a success. The skulls just explode. Because this is so very steamy. Immediately, the wizard, emerging in like a gown with a nightcap on, sort of rubs his eyes and goes, what is this? What is going on? Oh, it's those rubes. I turned into volatile explosives. Hello!
A javelin, the skeleton arm with the knife in it, straight to the wizard's heart.
Make me a roll.
Yes! Already beloved character, Tim Keeper. One.
Okay. So the good news is you have defeated the wizard and you have purged his evil from the land. But in so doing, you have also destroyed yourselves.
Yes.
And basically, it would take the world's greatest forensics team to kind of separate all of you for a Cromunant burial. 2 minutes... No, 4 minutes, 56 seconds.
Oh.
I was just about to get Piers Morgan to interview the wizard about how magic is becoming too woke these days.
Well, Piers Morgan has died.
Yes.
Hooray!
Let's clip that and tweet it to him. Ellie, you had a long period at Eurogamer, excuse me. And,
yeah, fuck dice, yeah.
And you also worked on Go 8-Bit. So we thought we might ask you, similar to Johnny's, what Johnny's six stats would be, we thought we'd ask you, what would the four buttons on the Ellie Gibson console controller make you do? What's your X and Y?
So is this I'm the character and these are the buttons?
Yeah, what do they
make you do? Who's controlling the controller? Who's holding...
Your 11-year-old son.
Oh, God. No, that's a terrible idea. That would just be endlessly making snacks. Now, I imagined that Oprah was controlling it, because if I had to choose someone to be in charge of my life, that's who I would choose. I feel like she's got her shit together in a way that I never will have. So I picked her, and then I was like, well, I would have her... Like, she could press a button to make me do things that I find impossibly hard to do in real life, like put laundry away. That's very, very difficult. go to the post office. It takes me about 6 months if I've got to post something. So I'd like Oprah to just press a button and I'd just go and do it. Also paying a check-in, because I'm so old, I've still got relatives who send me like checks and like pound coins, sellotapes into cards. Oh. So someone could make me pay a check-in. And finally, I thought, let's have something fun, something nice. I've always wanted to be able to river dance.
Would that be like track and field, where you've got to hammer the button?
Yeah,
really
exactly. Yeah. My little legs would go, but my arms would be very still. That's my dream. Oprah making me river dance. Yeah.
To do all of your day-to-day tasks.
Yes, yeah, to the river dancing to the post office to pay a check-in. wearing a jumper that I got out of the cupboard because I put it away earlier. That's my dream.
If anyone can make you do that, it's
Oprah. It's a dream. Yeah, then that's magic.
I had a thought what mine would be. I'll go for overthink, panic, hide, and a button that has don't press under any circumstances over it. just to really increase the anxiety again, Johnny. So we've asked Ellie to think about what the world's worst controller would be. Every time you went to a friend's house to play video games, it was always one controller was the sticky controller or the bad controller.
Always the third party, always the mad cats or something like that. It was always awful. There have been so many awful controllers, and you sort of suggested that peripherals could be allowed as well.
Yeah.
So I thought there's a lot of nominees. There's the Game Boy printer. Do you remember that? So on the original Game Boy, you could print out really tiny, shitty, pixelated pictures.
Yeah.
Except you couldn't, because it was impossibly hard to get the special thermal paper that you needed.
Yes.
And the printer needed 6 AA batteries to run. So it cost more just to power the thing than it would to go to a shop.
I'm sorry.
Did you have one? Oh, no. What did you print out?
Well, you could do stickers of, like, Mario and stuff, because all the paper was stickers.
Or you could just buy some stickers of Mario.
I wasn't independently wealthy. I owned this. I remember I took photos of my cousins, I seem to remember. I don't know. Oh, that sounded weird.
I'm a gamer.
Well, there was that one. There was, I remember writing about this for a magazine once, there was a dance mat, but a palm top dance mat.
Oh, yeah.
So you just use your fingers instead of your legs, which, again, if you shit a river dance, actually, is brilliant.
Yeah. Or alternatively, coax your hamster out of its cage, put a little tutu on it.
Could do that. And then this was, I never had this, but I've read about this. So this was, do you remember Kinect Adventure? So Kinect was the camera that Microsoft brought out for the Xbox after the Wii was hugely successful. And they went, oh, we'll just fucking rip that off. So they brought out this Kinect and this game called Kinect Adventures. And one of the games was you were on like a little raft going down the rapids. And it was, you know, it was fine. And then this third party company brought out the PlayOn Game Boat, which was an actual boat, like a raft, like a rubber raft, right? That, and you're thinking, oh, that's quite cool. So you plug it into the Xbox. No, it's just a raft. It's not electronically powered.
It's just a tie-in.
It's just like, it's not an official tie-in, obviously. But
and then they go, wait, are we a boating company? We don't do electronics anymore.
And so I've not played, but there's a video of a very upset and put upon man from Kotaku who's been tasked with reviewing it on the internet. And the boat is only 3 foot wide. So you can't sit down in the boat like you can in the game. You have to stand in it. And there are bits of the game you have to sidestep, right, to make the boat move. But because it's only 3 feet wide, you have to step outside the boat, the real boat, to make the boat in the game work. And it's absolutely full. And it comes with a foot pump, and it takes 10 minutes to blow it up. And
I missed the fact it was inflatable. That's great.
And just when you're thinking, I watched the advert for it, and just when you're thinking, well, this is obviously useless, it's $34.99. So
that's
not
quite reasonable.
Yeah, for a boat. And then it says, you can use it on water, because it is a boat. So it would be absolutely ideal for hot tub streams, I think. So that was a strong contender, but I thought for the number one, it would have to be something I have actually been forced to play, which was, everyone knows Tony Hawk, all gamers know, Tony Hawk skateboarding, right? And I think it was 2009, I had to review for Eurogamer Tony Hawk Ride, which was a skateboarding game that came with a skateboard, but not just any skateboard, a skateboard without wheels. Because someone went, what could make skateboarding better? Yeah. So it was just like, it was like a full-size thing. It was like the size of a skateboard, but it had no wheels. It just sort of had a plastic bottom, so it sort of wobbled around.
Right.
And it was a complete piece of shit. And it didn't work at all. And I had to review it. And also, the game itself was terrible. Like, Tony Hawk, by this point, was completely not involved with the franchise. He was just signing checks, paying checks in, actually. Maybe getting Oprah to do it for him at this point, I don't know. So, so it had all this terrible branding in the game because he was just grabbing all the money. So, like, the moves even had names like the T-Mobile Side Grab 5. Like, that was a move. In the game. So the game was bad, and then you had this terrible thing, and it didn't work properly. Like, and you felt like a complete fool because you were standing in your lounge on a sort of bit of plastic wobbling around. It was awful. And it had this online thing, and I started playing this guy. And I worked out I could beat him if instead of actually standing on the skateboard and trying to skate, I just sat on the floor and waved it above my head. And I beat him by 10,000 points.
Yeah.
So that was the worst one. And then I remember when I was moving house, I was trying to get rid of it. And I'd got, the game had gone, I'd probably burned it or something, gone AWOL a long time. I had this skateboard and I was like, what do I do with it? I can't just put it in the bin. That's terrible for the environment. And I'm ashamed to say, I'm not proud of it, but I will confess, I did put it in the charity shop. And then I did feel really bad and think about these poor old dears in Sydenham Cancer Research go, what are we supposed to do with this? It's a skateboard, but it's got no wheels. But who knows? Maybe they're big Tony Hawk fans and they had a lovely time.
Yeah, maybe.
I met Tony Hawk when he was having to do a press run for that game because they knew they had a howler on their hands and they were like... They airdropped in Tony Hawk. So I filmed like a piece. I was working for ITN at the time, like with my sort of co-host playing this game with Tony Hawk.
What, and Sir Trevor McDonald on there?
That's right. Yeah.
And finally,
the man can kickflip. I'm telling you. But it was one of those things where he was like, we were like, thanks so much, Tony. And he was on camera being like, that's, you know, my pleasure. La 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 la. I was like, okay, and cut, and just. Sadness. Like, he knew it was a turkey. I mean, to be honest, the money probably helped, but like we were all of us just kind of there being like, well, we're excited to film with you, and you have to pretend to be excited about this piece of shit, so let's just make this work.
My favourite thing about Tony Hawk is there is a English comedian called Tony Hawks who wrote a book around Ireland with a fridge, and Tony Hawks on Twitter regularly gets contacted by people asking him for skateboarding tips, to which he replies. And I like to think that Tony Hawk occasionally gets, you know, pictures of people's fridges sent to him. I read a little bit about bad controllers as well. I just read about the mouse, invented in the 1960s by a guy called Doug Engelbart. The unit
I
of
think
measure-
you'll find it was invented in the year 5000 BC by God.
Yes. Or in 1930 by Walt Disney.
Yes.
There's a unit of measurement that calculates the speed and movement direction of a computer mouse. It's called the Mickey. Yeah, there's that's the one fact everyone's going to remember. I read about the Alpha Grip iGrip. This was a mid-90s solution to PC gaming and typing, because games were still on QWERTY keyboards. So this company thought, how could we condense an entire QWERTY keyboard into a single handheld controller? Surely there isn't enough space on such a thing to place all the buttons on it. You're right, there isn't. So a lot of the buttons are on the back of it. So there are like half the buttons on the top of it, half the buttons. It was impossible to type with or play games with. And yeah, I read a bit about peripherals. So people who aren't necessarily gaming, the famous one is the guitar you play Guitar Hero with, the controller that's designed specifically for a game. There have been Donkey Kong bongos.
They were good.
Yeah. They were good.
Yeah.
But they were
game.
Only on the GameCube. So the GameCube, not so good. Samba de Amigo maracas.
Quite good.
Yeah,
they
quite
were quite good.
Good. They made a rattling noise, which you could turn off. The Sega Dreamcast fishing rod. Which was launched with Sega Bass Fishing, and it was compatible with six other fishing games, and bizarrely also with Virtual Tennis.
And the play on Game Boat, of course.
Yeah. there's a Resident Evil chainsaw, which was basically a novelty chainsaw with buttons on it. The NES Power Glove, which is like if you imagine a cool 1980s glove that can control your enemies, that sort of thing.
That's what I imagined Oprah wearing when she was sending me to the post office.
This one obviously was 1980s tech, so it didn't really work, and it was also only released in a right hand. But I didn't go for any of those. I've gone for the controllers attached to the Soldier game. Guys, you thought Elon Musk was the worst tech entrepreneur you've ever heard of. But Soldier Boy, yes, that Soldier Boy, has released a video game console, several video game consoles, called the Soldier Game. He claimed, when he announced in 2018, that it came pre-packaged with 800 games. What was it? It was basically a Chinese knockoff emulator of Nintendo and Sega handheld games, and they were just... You can literally Google the exact same thing without Soldier Boy's stickers on it. And it's called the Shenzhen Yang Liming Pro 4K. And you could buy them on Alibaba for like $72. And he knocked them up to $200 and basically was reselling them with games that included Mario Bros. 1, 2, 3, Super Mario 14.
A classic of the genre.
A classic. Kung Fu Mari, not a typo, it's just missing the O. Angry Birds 2 for the NES, a console that came out 25 years before the Angry Birds games.
And Pokemon Gold, which refers to Ash as ass. And Pokemon Blue, which included Dick Dastardly and the Wacky Racers as characters.
Pokemon Blue is what you play after playing Sexy Monopoly.
With ass, presumably. And all of the controls are made from really lightweight plastic. The material on the website, when you look, you know, you get the, like, this is the dimensions of the console, this is the power wattage. The material section, it had material, colon, soldier game, video game console.
Hewn from the earth. With maggots.
From the soldier game video console mines. Yeah, obviously, Nintendo went, oh no, you need to take that off sale immediately. The day before, Soldier Boy tweeted, "For anyone that thinks Nintendo is going to sue me, nothing's going to happen. Everything is legit. My console isn't going anywhere, trust me." The Soldier Game website was seized by Nintendo and redirected people to Nintendo's own website. So our choices are the Soldier Game or the Tony Hawk Ride skateboard. I'm going to let the audience decide on this. So let's have a boo for Tony Hawk's on three. One, two, three. Boo. And a boo for Soldier Boy. One, two, three. I think Soldier Boy is worse than Tony Hawk's. I'm sorry, Ellie. Definitively.
You didn't play it. You weren't there.
We've got one more game to play before we wind up. And we're going to put Ellie and Johnny's video game knowledge to the test by playing for them 10 sound effects from video games and ask them to recognise them. Then we realised we'd probably run into money problems over copyright. So we thought, oh, maybe Ben and I will do the sounds ourselves, a bit like the intros, rounds, and never mind the buzzcocks. And then we thought, nah, let's get the audience to do the sounds instead. So, audience, we're going to hold up some cue cards with various famous sounds, music, or quotes from video games, and we're going to ask you to perform them, even if you do not know what they are.
Especially if you do not know what they are.
There's going to be 5 for each of you, Johnny and Ellie, to pit you against each other. And make sure they can't see that, Ben. And all the sounds have to be in the form of the syllable bop. So if I asked you to do God Save the King, you would go... Bop, bop, bop. Yeah. Or Travis Bickle in Taxi Driver saying, "You talking to me," you would do... Hey, yes, good.
Audience full of chickens.
Yeah. It's like the Muppet Show all of a sudden. All right, now nice and loud, and if you don't know what they are, have a go anyway. Now, Ellie, you're up first.
Okay.
And Ben is holding up the first one on our laser display board over there. Audience, on three. One, two, three.
Oh, Tetris.
Was that?
Tetris.
Tetris is correct.
Very well done. That was very good.
We'd start easy. All right. And now the next one is for Johnny. Okay. On three, audience. One, two, three.
Pardon?
We can have it again.
Yes,
one,
please.
Two, three. Someone's doing a helpful hand gesture.
Oh, I know. Oh, no. Hang on.
Focus on the man in the grey shirt doing the hand gesture.
Oh, Hadouken.
Hadouken, yes. Very good. From Street Fighter. Very good. All right, back to Ellie.
Thank you.
On three, audience. One, two, three.
So, Super Mario. I do feel like I'm having a slightly easier ride, to be honest with
you. Oh, no. Oh, no, you're fine.
Super Mario is correct. Yes, very good. This is a nice retro one. Come on, audience. One, two, three.
Oh, come on.
That's the Sega.
Yeah!
Which I was recently told took up half of the memory on all the cartridges.
That sounds...
Bananas.
Amazing. All right, this is a trickier one for Ellie. Okay, audience, after three... If you only play it, some people won't notice because they don't necessarily play this genre of game, I think. On three. One, two, three.
Ooh.
Fuck it, we should just ditch the trivia. I would do an hour of this show.
They're very angry, aren't they?
Yeah.
Can I hear that again, please?
Yes, yes. Let's go again. One, two, three.
I saw the thing, so I know what it is, but think loading screens again.
Yeah, loading screens.
Oh. No.
Ba, 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 ba.
Gonna have to time you out, I think, Ellen.
Is it a Nintendo one?
No, it's
yeah,
not.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't, because I prefer Sega because it is superior, so I wouldn't know that. Yeah. I don't know the more obscure.
It is audience without bopping, actually doing it properly. 1, 2, 3.
EA Sports is a
great. Very good. Yes.
But you went ba-ba. You didn't go ba-ba-ba-ba.
Yes, it's very much their fault.
Yeah. Also, it should be husky. It's in the game.
It's hard to do Bob. Next one for Johnny. Again, this is from one specific game. So,
okay. 1, 2, 3. Legend of Zelda.
Yes, it is. Opening a chest in The Legend of Zelda. There we very go. Good, yes. Johnny's taking a 3-2 lead, 2 more remaining. Ellie, your next one. Audience. 1, 2, 3. You're not allowed to guess EA Sports again. let's have that again. That was a lot of it. 1, 2, 3. It's very husky.
Is that? I don't know what that is. Can I have a clue?
We've had a similar think Hadouken, but not.
Ryuken.
No. Audience on three, do it
I
properly.
Don't know.
1, 2, 3.
Get over here
for Mortal Kombat.
Oh, I don't know. I don't play Mortal Kombat because it's rubbish.
I grew up with Mortal Kombat rather than Street Fighter, and I agree.
The boggle of fighting games. I'm really looking forward to this one.
Oh, God.
Johnny, is the audience able to see this? On three. 1, 1, 2, 3.
Oh, Pac-Man.
Yeah! Johnny has an unassailable lead, but let's do the last two. Ellie, this is a Nintendo one. I'll give you this clue before we start. 1, 2, 3.
What the... Nintendo one?
Yeah. Again, audience. 1, 2, 3. You might be able to detect an accent in those bumps.
I don't know.
Nominate one person in the audience.
Yeah.
A, because it will ruin their day, and also because I think there's a Doppler effect.
Front row, all right, nice and loud so we can pick up the mics. On three. 1, 2, 3.
Well, it's Mario doing something.
It's nearly.
I don't know what he's saying. Please.
Audience, put Ellie out of her misery. 1, 2, 3. Yeah. And this last one, just specifically for you, Johnny, I picked this. This is for a full house, by the way. So if you can get this one, you'll have all five. Don't let me down, audience. Those of you who know this. 1, 2, 3. No, it needs to be in sync, audience. And ready? One more time. 1, 2, 3. You might know this best from a meme. It's taking us funnily all the way back to Monopoly.
I'm more lost than I was before you started talking.
The one place.
Oh!
Uncorrupted.
Spy!
Yes!
Finish hurry in Red Alert 3?
Correct, yes.
You have no idea how hard I lobbied Barry to have us put Pong up on there.
Johnny is the winner of that with a resounding 5-2. We have a little crap medal for you as well, Johnny. Just enough time for us to have a look at our suggestions for how to make Monopoly better. Thank you, audience, for sending these in. Daniel Heatley. Hi, Daniel. Life sentences in jail. Make Monopoly better. absolutely don't make it life-sized. Thank you, Elsie. However, have live animals as tokens. But presume they'll have to be small enough to fit in the board, so they'll have to be like caterpillar.
Have them as large as possible.
Have them as large as possible. Kirsty suggests, make Monopoly better, just add cats, live cats, release the cats. Darsh, hello Darsh, a chance card which rotates hands just to irritate the person who's winning. Wiggy, make Monopoly better, play Monopoly by setting the board on fire and then tell the kids you love them for once. Alistair Rice, Alistair, if you can roll the dice accurately enough to knock over someone's hotels, the hotels are eliminated as if an asteroid had hit Earth.
Oh, that's good.
That's very good.
Very, very popular. Last couple here. Have you ever thought that maybe Monopoly wasn't long enough? Maybe that's the problem. Introducing Monopoly Jigsaw. The board is a jigsaw. The chance cards are jigsaws. Everything's a jigsaw. You must make it to play it.
And also it is cake.
Thank you, Dev. One of the playable pieces is an inflatable baby Trump replacing the T-Rex, where they can either be used as an agent of chaos to exemplify the unfairness that is capitalism, or can be made to horribly abide by a moral set of rules the other players create to the point where they get to have the pleasure of seeing Trump actually go to jail. Satire, Tom Manning, excellent. And finally, Danny, make Monopoly better, chess boxing edition. If you land on a property owned by someone, you have to either fight them or beat them at chess. And if you win, you get the property. Hotels, etc. are handicaps. Very good. I think, though, judging by the reaction in the room, Alistair's suggestion of roll the dice, knock over some hotels, asteroid hitting London, I think that seemed to be the winner in the room. So, Alistair, why are you giving us a wave? Hi, Alistair. We'll give you a little prize. Do you want to know what it is?
Yes.
It's a game of Monopoly, Alistair. Game of Monopoly. Barely used, and the one time it was used, it was quickly put away again.
Tremendous stuff. Well, thank you everyone for coming on to our live recording, and we will see you again in 5 years' time when we've emerged from our underground lair. Before we go, Ellie, where can our listeners find you, and what will they find you doing when they get there?
Oh, so I'm in a double act called Scummy Mummies. So we do a podcast and we do a live show. We're doing one in Catford on Thursday and Friday. Massive shows this week. If anyone's loose end. You said it's about parenting. It used to be about parenting. It's been 10 years. It's mainly about, you know, drinking and swearing and
so
moaning.
Then,
it's a lot of moaning, basically. Yeah. So, yeah.
Smashing stuff. And Johnny, where can people find you and what can they find you doing?
They can find me on the imaginatively named youtube.com/JohnnyChiodini, where I stream video games and myself painting Warhammer those two things, basically.
Smashing stuff.
Oh, and I forgot I'm a streamer as well. I do that as well. So I'm on Twitch on Tuesdays and Fridays. I'm doing a 12-hour charity stream a week on Tuesday. So I'm going to be using a commode. So I'm a... I'm at Ellie Gibson Games.
Is that a Nintendo commode?
a Tony Hawk's commode. Yeah. Yeah.
But with wheels for added jeopardy. Smashing stuff. Well, we are all off to get the audience to record a version of the Pokemon theme shown, but only in bops, and knock Lad Baby off the Christmas number one at last. Thank you very much for listening. This has been Worst Foot Forward Live. Goodbye!